It's Northeast Delta Dental Radio with Tom Raffio.
Welcome to Northeast Delta Dental Radio. I'm Tom Raffio for Northeast Delta Dental Radio, and I'm also the head coach of the dental insurance company known as Northeast Delta Dental. Well, it's hard to believe we're less than a week away to Thanksgiving. Big shout out to my guest last weekend, Mike Ramshaw, who's the president and general manager of the New Hampshire Fisher Cats. And Mike and I were discussing on that day the virtual Granite State baseball dinner, which was a hybrid. Some of the celebrities came in person and most were via Zoom. And that was a great success. And once again, we raised thousands of dollars for Chad. And over the course of many years, really since 2007, literally millions of dollars have been raised through the Granite State baseball dinner. So big shout out to Mike Ramshaw. Also want to give a shout out to my running friends who managed to, with me, run in the Arthritis Jingle Bell Run on November 21st, and was a wonderful event. What can I say? We're the only Jingle Bell Run in the entire United States. So big shout out to Millennium Running for working with the governor's office to create, you know, safe running guidelines. And back in October, we had a very successful Delta Dental half marathon from Hopkinton, New Hampshire to Concord, and we had over 1,000 racers. But think of it in terms of there was really, like, you know, 10 races of 100 people with everybody having their own start time. So there was a big stream of people running in from Hopkinton to Concord. But this weekend with me is one of my familiar guests, Dr. Richard Berryman, who's a longtime dentist in Concord, great leader in terms of the Rotary, but also here at still at Northeast Delta Dental, one of our in-house senior dental consultants. So Richard, once again, thank you for joining me. Means a lot.
Always a pleasure, Tom. I will say that I miss you and everyone else around the campus. It's not as much fun working from home, but that's the real world we're in.
Yeah, and that's a good segue to what we'll be talking about today. And, of course, I'll just to level set the audience, these are round figures, but really since right around March 16th, there's been about 50 of us that have been working on campus, you know, folks that, deliver the mail and our finance people and our phone customer service people, and about 150 of our employees, like Richard, Dr. Berryman, and many others in claims and technology and all the departments, legal, have been working virtually. And over that period of time between roughly March 16th and through the summer, more and more, as if this became inevitable, that it looked like it was going to be, instead of just a couple months, it might be a year, maybe even longer, we started to enhance the technology that people had at home, and they needed a printer, they got a printer. We also put in a new phone system, so theoretically starting next year we could even have our phone customer service people, you know, take calls from home. But that's the reality, and what I've pointed out to people is we're going to, and I put this in a union leader article, but essentially we are pointing to next June. We're going to take another look at all this. June is when we do two major things. We have a huge employee event on our soccer field at One Delta. And then we also go do strategic planning. And this year, it's supposed to, in 2021, it was supposed to be in Vermont. So we'll look at that and see where we're at, whether there's a universally, you know, implemented vaccine or not. But for the moment, while we all miss the human contact, we have, of course, we do Zoom and WebExes, and we kind of see each other on the computer screen. But I will be the first to say that it's not the same. But every day, everybody and the employee colleagues, you know, hear from me via, you know, at least one email, and so we're doing the best. The company actually is, you know, running as efficiently as ever, but I just do want to acknowledge it's not quite the same when you don't get to see people, you know, like Richard. So to level set the audience, so roughly from March 16th, when the American Dental Association recommended that dentists should only see emergency cases, until about May 11th, when the governor's task force, during the course of mostly April and early May, worked with the New Hampshire Dental Society and the Board of Dental Examiners and other leading policymakers and and doctors developed standards for when dentists could come back and see people for regular visits. So we had this period of time between March 16th and May 11th when dentists were getting the PPE. Northeast Delta Dental, we distributed like over 110,000 KN95 masks and about 9,000 reusable gowns and other PPE, personal protection equipment. So dentists were able, with the hygienists, able to get up back up and running for all sorts of regular visits in New Hampshire starting on May 11th. In Maine, it was May 18th. In Vermont, the Tuesday after Memorial Day, May 26th. For some procedures, and then on June 1st for everything else. So during that process, there were a lot of seminars, a lot of webinars, but I was always, Richard, confident that dentists would know how to deal with infection control, because really since the 80s and 90s when you were dealing with HIV, obviously you had to have the best infection control. This obviously... put it over the top. But I was very confident dentists and hygienists could do this, and I'll be the first to say, based on feedback I get from dentists, that at the end of the day they're wearing all of the protective equipment. They're way more tired than maybe pre-COVID, but I was confident that dentists could do it. I was less confident that patients would flock back to the dentist. But as it turns out, our July, August, and September and October claims have basically been pretty close to the pre-COVID norm. So it's a great formula. But let's talk about dental offices and viral infections. And before we get into the new novel, virus, coronavirus, let's talk about, for lack of a better term, sort of the traditional things like hepatitis B and A and HIV, and tell us everything about that, Richard. Thank you.
Yeah, well, I thought with the environment we're in, it would be a nice topic just to look back at a little bit of history to try and get some perspective on what happened in the past and what's going on now and possibly what's going to happen in the future. So, I mean, when I was in dental school, which was a long time ago, the things we worried about mainly were things like syphilis, but that was a bacterial infection, and herpes, and then hepatitis B, of course, because hepatitis B is a viral infection that affects the liver, causing inflammation in the liver, and it's very, very contagious. It's bloodborne, so you really have to get blood-to-blood contact, and it was probably our number one concern among for treating patients up until the early 80s, when 1981 the vaccine came out, and it was three injections over a six-month period, and it's found to be 95% effective, and the immunity lasts 20 years to life. Hepatitis A was a little bit different. It was also a virus, not very contagious, but spread through contaminated food and water. Poor sanitation. And I remember when I was a senior in high school in 1965, I guess I can say that, one of the workers in our school cafeteria went home for Christmas and was exposed to hepatitis A, came back, and all of a sudden a bunch of students started getting sick, and we had to get gamma globulin shots. There was no vaccine at that time, of course. Vaccine for hepatitis A did come out in 1996, and it's also been found to be 95% effective. Then, of course, in the 80s, all of a sudden, it was the scary one, and it's still scary, is HIV, or human immunodeficiency virus, AIDS, is what everybody knows it as. And it's different in that it's a virus that attacks the body's immune system. There is no cure. There is no vaccine. The studies have shown that it jumped from chimpanzees to humans back as late as the late 1800s. And the first case in the United States was 1981. It's not very contagious. It's spread by contact with body fluids. But it's not like hepatitis or herpes simplex, genital or oral herpes. It's not very contagious at all. And, of course, it hit the news with the Florida dentist, Dr. David Acer, who all of a sudden had six patients who contacted HIV in his office. Most notable was a 20-year-old Kimberly Bergalis, who brought legal action to Dr. Acer's estate because he also had AIDS, and he died in 1990. According to the Centers for Disease Control, this is the only case, proven case, where AIDS infection was transmitted in a dental office. But it led to a whole bunch of changes, as Tom, as you alluded to a few minutes ago, with the establishment of universal precautions. In other words, you have to treat every person who comes into your practice as if they are infected, and which means that there were mandatory use of masks, gloves, eye protection, gowns, and, of course, sterilization of all instruments. Up until that point, we pretty much just sterilized our surgical instruments. And the ones we used for carving fillings or something like that, we didn't. We used a cold sterilization. So that changed the environment quite a bit.
You know, it's interesting, you know, like, and once we go to after break, we'll get right into the current with COVID-19, but as a kid, I remember, you know, going to the dentist and the orthodontist, and they weren't wearing gloves. I just remember it, you know, vividly, but you're right, with the David Acer case and HIV, that really changed things, which is sort of my lead into why I was very confident that dentists and hygienists could deal with COVID, because they were already so much trained, you know, in infection control because of the HIV experience. So after commercial break, we'll start it off right there with SARS and COVID-19 and what's currently going on in the dental office. I will just leave the audience with, as I've written in at least two op-eds, it's very safe to go to the dentist. And in fact, I have found the experience to be better than ever and more efficient than ever, because there's really no waiting in the waiting room. Welcome back to Northeast Delta Dental Radio. Tom Raffio with Dr. Richard Berryman this weekend of November 21st and 22nd. And if you're listening to this on November 21st, you can still virtually watch the Granite State, you know, baseball dinner, you know, tonight at around 5 o'clock. Just go on the NH Fisher Cats website, and you can get the information there. And a big thank you to all my running friends who turned up at Delta Dental Stadium for the Jingle Bell arthritis run earlier this morning. So with that, Richard was, and I guess, again, for background, Richard is a well-known dentist in the Concord area. He's been working with Delta Dental for many years, and a big, awesome leader in terms of the rotary and the different trips. And so he's, you know, one of our experts and does, leads our professional review. So we left it that back in the 80s and 90s, the establishment of universal precautions because of HIV. And for most people listening to this, you know, younger than me, I mean, since you've been going to the dentist, you've been, dentists have been wearing gloves and you know, other eye protection, et cetera. So, of course, COVID has taken it to the next level. So let me pause there and have you segue from, you know, the infection control needed because of HIV to first SARS and then COVID-19. Richard.
Yeah, well, SARS virus I don't have a lot of information on, because it really didn't hit the United States in any significant way. But these are all, many of these viruses are viruses that mutate and they're in animals, and then they jump to humans just as the, AIDS or HIV did from chimpanzees to humans way, way back. So this SARS COVID-2 or COVID-19 was also jumped from animals to humans, probably bats. And, of course, everybody knows that it started in China with these wet markets where they sell live animals for food, and it spreads from Wuhan very, very rapidly. It's an incredibly contagious disease, viral disease. It's spread by airborne droplets, so it spreads through the air when somebody coughs, sneezes, talks, sings, shouts. Mainly affects the lungs, and in many cases it can be asymptomatic. It could be mild or it could be severe, and obviously we know that from currently 217,000 Americans have lost their lives, so it can result in death. The United States leads the world in the greatest number of cases and deaths per population, which is not a great banner to hang on our flagpole, but
it's a metric, and of course some would argue that's the yin and the yang of, you know, we have a free country where, you know, people want to be able to come and go and don't necessarily want to be told to do certain things. And of course, there's, you know, that is the yin and the yang of all this. It's interesting about the spread via airborne droplets. And as you said, you know, the super spreader, well, you didn't mention, but the super spreader events involving, you know, singing and coughing and so on and so forth. I'm fortunate that I'm on the Dartmouth-Hitchcock Healthcare System Board, and you know, we get a lot of scientific, factual information, and that I know it recently that there was the emphasis on that the spread is exactly the way Dr. Behrman mentioned, you know, through the airborne droplets. And while it's certainly possible to pick it up on a surface, that there's, you know, less and less fear about that, but it's definitely, you know, via the airborne droplets. So thank you for know, amplifying that. So tell us now, okay, so that's the reality. Of course, dentists and hygienists are dealing with a lot of airborne droplets. And so, as already mentioned, basically, dental offices were closed for almost 3 months between roughly March 16th to May 11th, except for emergencies. And so when dental offices in New Hampshire opened up on May 11th, you know, there were new CDC guidelines as well as, you know, local guidelines, you know, that were developed, you know, by Dr. Chan and a lot of work by the New Hampshire Dental Society and so forth. So tell us how you sort of see the new guidelines, you know, since COVID. And I, again, would just say from my own personal experience, having gone to the dentist three or four times since May 11th, the experience, I feel, candidly, safer than ever. It's more efficient than ever. It's been a great experience, and I think pretty typical, apparently, of citizens of New Hampshire, because our claim counts are approximating, you know, pre-COVID levels. Now, of course, remains to be seen if some of that was pent-up demand, so cleanings and so forth that were postponed between March 16th and May 11th. So we'll see how the rest of the year plays out. And I obviously understand if there was some dramatic spike or some huge new thing related to the coronavirus that could impact that. But as I see it, you know, dentists, I think they're working harder than ever because of all the PPE, but people have, in fact, in a good way, flocked back to the dentist. So it's great. So tell us how you kind of envision, you know, the dental office, you know, since the new CDC guidelines.
Yeah, well, for those who have been to the dentist or been to your medical doctor, I know I've had my annual physical. I have not been back to the dentist yet, but you already have seen, or you will see, a lot of changes. Number one, people are going to be asking you a lot of questions about, you know, have you been out of state? Have you been around somebody that's tested positive to coronavirus? Have you been feeling any symptoms? And even we know now that people who are can spread if they're asymptomatic. Usually, when you go to your dentist, you may have to wait in your vehicle until your appointment time, and they will call you and they will ask you the questions again. They ask you when you make the appointment, they ask you they confirm the appointment, and then they ask you again when you arrive. So the screening temperature questions are asked. When you come into the office, your temperature will be taken, and all of this will be documented in your record. If you do spend any time in a waiting area, you'll notice that those waiting areas have the seating much farther apart for social distancing. There won't be any magazines or any books or any literature for anybody to touch. The patients are expected and mandatory to wear masks in the office at all times, except when they are being treated. And as I said, there's social distancing in any waiting area. The dental personnel must wear masks all the time they're in the office, even in non-patient areas. They can only see one patient at a time. The PPE, as you mentioned, Tom, is more important because it has to be changed with every patient. If it's disposable, it needs to be discarded. If it is launderable, it needs to be laundered after every patient. The offices need to, you may see some new equipment in the dental operatory or the treatment room. These are special filtration, air filtration systems with HEPA filters. The offices are pretty much looking at their ventilation systems and whether they can be upgraded or not. And then, of course, it's the aerosol procedures that are the most difficult because in the past, when you had your teeth cleaned, for example, they may have used a sonic or ultrasonic scaler, which, of course, sprays out a lot of water. And then, of course, the dental drill does the same thing. So these are supposed to be used, as only when necessary. So you may find your cleanings are a little bit different, that the hygienists are using all hand instruments. That's pretty much it.
No, that's a great depiction, and that's what I've experienced. You get there, someone takes your temperature, you're ushered in precisely when you need to be in the operatory, and everybody is wearing masks, and the trick for the dentist is to obviously still convey their smile even though they're dressed up like astronauts, because they not only have a mask but they have the shields, gowns, etc. And so in just talking to a number of dentists, including our own Dr. Mitch Caray, I mean, it is basically one of the things that the dentists are trained to do is engender the trust of their patients, because there still is a significant percentage of the population that still has a slight fear of going to the dentist. And so part of the training is to look welcoming. And so it's like conveying that smile, below the mask. But it's happening. And I know nationally, the patient load is about 70 to 75% based on Health Policy Institute, statistics. But again, locally, in terms of northern New England, meaning New Hampshire, Maine, and Vermont, I think we're leading the way, Richard, because I think, our patient load is probably more like 96%. So to me, I mean, it's just been really great to see, and it's not to minimize the disruption, because obviously from March 16th to May 11th, people were laid off or furloughed, and not everybody maybe has returned to work, particularly if you maybe were a salaried dentist working for a group practice. But I think, considering everything, I think we've made the dental industry has made a remarkable recovery. And Richard, and as I mentioned, I was confident because, as you pointed out, I mean, that all that discipline in terms of infection control, and those universal precautions really began in the 80s and 90s, when HIV hit.
Yes, and I think what people have to think about is that not only are dentists concerned about the health of their patients, but they're concerned about their own health. And so they're going to do everything they can to make a dental practice as healthy and as safe as humanly possible.
That's a great point, and it's not just themselves. They're obviously, most dental offices have a family atmosphere. I mean, the employee colleagues, whether it's the dental assistant, the receptionist, the hygienist, obviously the dentist wants to make sure all those people you know, are safe. So it's really, I think it's really, you know, come together, and I think we've done our part at Northeast Delta Dental in terms of, you know, giving out the PPE and giving out grants, and our total relief package to the community at large was about $27 million, and that included premium holidays because we didn't want employers to drop the dental coverage, because we know that when an employer has dental coverage for their employees, those people go to the dentist way more often than if they didn't have coverage. So we wanted to make sure that once the dentists were ready to see patients again, that employers still had the dental insurance. So it's all kind of worked out. Long, I think there's my third book is in that little short statement that I made. There was a lot to that $27 million and how we, you know, a lot of stakeholders worked together, including the, you know, the governor's office. It's no different as saying this to the governor when I saw him at the Delta Dental Half Marathon. The John Mortimer, who runs the Millennium Running, I mean, they develop standards of how to run road races safely. Well, the same thing was going on the, you know, on the dental side. So, Richard, you're a big part of it. Thank you for still being connected to us. I know it's harder virtually, but thank you for being on the team, Richard.
Well, it's a pleasure, and it's been a lot of fun.
Great. All right. So Dr. Richard Berryman, Senior Dental Consultant for Northeast Delta Dental, thank you. For baseball fans, remember tonight, November 21st, is the virtual Granite State Baseball Dinner.